Tommy Keane from the new LP, 10 Years After. Turning on Blue is the single. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, and calling live from the Regal Beagle in New York City, we have Mr. Tommy Keane.
Welcome to the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, Tommy.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing okay.
All right.
So, what does that mean, Turning on Blue?
Turning on Blue? I thought you weren't going to ask me this.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just kidding. I think it's sort of going into a bad mood for some reason or another.
Oh.
Like, I don't know, getting melancholy.
So it's your way of saying catching the blues, man.
That's right.
You know, the blues ain't nothing but a good man feeling bad. Okay, what does 10 Years After, that's the name of the new CD,
well,
does that refer to Alvin Lee's band, or is it 10 years after your first record?
Well, neither.
10 years after you got laid?
No, not that either.
Didn't Songs from the Film
actually
come out 10 years ago?
What?
Well, how long ago did Songs from the Film come out?
Yeah, Songs from the Film came out in 86 on the big, huge Geffen record label.
That's right, and 10 years later to the very day, almost, 10 years after came out. So that it's sort of a, it's really kind of a, just a reference to that, and yes, I did like 10 years after, and I was in a band in junior high, and we played a lot of 10 years after.
So Tommy Keane, what did you learn in those 10 years of musical performance and education?
we don't have that much time to go into all that, you know. Lots of things.
Well, when you were a young pup, when you were a young whelp growing up there in Washington, D.C., who were some of the bands you were really getting into? Who are you digging, as you musicians say?
Oh, God. Well, you know, like the Beatles, the Stones, the Who.
The typical stuff.
Yeah, I know.
But D.C.'s famous for a big kind of punk scene with Fugazi and Minor Threat and all them guys.
Yeah, I know those guys. In fact, they worked in a record store that a guy owned who put out my first record. And the bass player used to play with me, Ted Nicely, worked with them, and he ended up producing their first three or four records.
Ooh.
Now he's a big-time rock producer.
We're talking to Tommy Keane on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. So how's the new record doing for you? Are the people at Matador happy with it?
Yeah, I think they're very happy. I think, you know, as far as sales-wise, it's doing okay. You know, the radio has been a little bit reticent, and we did a video to that song, Turning on Blue, which we thought MTV might play a couple times on 120 Minutes. It was kind of a cheap video, but I thought it looked really good, and they didn't. So, but now, actually tonight, I just played a show here in New York City with, I'm playing in Paul Westerberg's group. And a friend of mine actually, you know, have you heard about this? MTV's launching this new MTV 2 or something?
Well, yeah, I've heard of that.
And I don't think it's going to be as asinine as the real MTV.
So. It couldn't possibly be.
It couldn't possibly. So I think maybe they'll play it.
You think it'll be like MTV was supposed to have been when they first came out, which is they're going to play cool stuff?
Yeah, but they never did.
Well, the first 3 or 4 weeks they did, didn't they? They were playing nothing but Cars videos before anyone ever heard of the Cars.
Oh, that's cool. I don't know. I mean, hopefully it'll be, you know, I mean, VH1's kind of fuddy-duddy, right?
Right.
They play too many sort of bad...
Moaney-moaney. They play a lot of moaney-moaney.
Top 10 hits.
Well, know. Tommy Keane, if you were the program director at MTV, what would you play?
Oh, well, I'd play a little bit of things, you know, everything to make people happy, but I'd probably play what you'd think I'd play, you know, groups that I like. And, you know, more sort of, I'd take more chances. That's the whole thing. You know, if you're a radio station or you're MTV and you've got the power to introduce stuff to people, they're going to hear it and they're going to like it. Or they're going to like it or they're going to switch the channel. So, I mean, it's all kind of relative. I think if you, you know, play a variety of stuff and don't get caught up in the flavor of the month, then I think that you're doing the public a service.
So, you know, testing and market research is killing radio and MTV. There's no one with any guts programming anything out there.
Not at all. You know, it's worse, you know, in the mid-80s, all that was played was like really bad hard rock, right?
Right.
So now then you have Nirvana and came along, and now you have just a million people that sound like Nirvana. So it's, you know, everything's like, oh, it's broken open, it's alternative. It's the same thing.
Same deal, just different bands.
Yeah, yeah.
Tommy Keane, when you first came out, how were you received? I mean, I know you had some records on some smaller labels like Dolphin and that other label that that guy from Washington put out, but your first major label release, which was Songs from the Film, how'd that do when it first came out in 86?
Well, it was doing pretty well while the record company was promoting it, and we went on a tour with Lloyd Cole, and we had a video on MTV in pretty decent rotation. And those days, I think Geffen Records was such that if it didn't happen immediately in, say, 4 weeks, they kind of moved on to something else, which is what they did. But if you look at bands that have sort of broken, and it's usually a case of the record company sticking with the band, like take the Gin Blossoms, right?
Well, Gin Blossoms, Jewel, the same way.
Right, I mean, that record was out for a year and didn't sell diddly, so they kept with it, they did another video, they poured more money into it, they kept them on the road, they kept them going, and eventually people got into it and it took off. And so, I mean, you know, this is, my story is not unique. I mean, I just wasn't given that chance. I was given a brief second, and then they were like, oh, well, let's move on to something else.
Do you feel a little cheated by the record companies like Alex Chilton or something?
Well, I don't know if I would...
In other words, are you jaded?
Of course. I am jaded, but it doesn't really... I mean, when you ask me these questions, I have to be sort of honest, but it doesn't really keep me up at night, you know?
We asked this to Brian Stevens, you know who he is? He used to be with the band called the Cave Dogs.
Yeah.
Now he's on his own.
They play with us once.
Right, well, we asked him why that kind of melodic power pop just doesn't seem to do real well when, like, you know, everybody that I know likes it and everybody that Chris knows likes it, but it just, maybe we don't know the right people, because none of those bands that are really good, like Gear Records and the Cave Dogs, and they don't ever seem to really catch on big. We asked him why he thought that was.
And what was his answer?
His answer was, well, the Gin Blossoms caught on, and they're kind of, sort of like that, maybe.
Right.
And then he kind of, like, just kind of waltzed around it.
Yeah.
He wanted to say because the American public's a bunch of blithering idiots, but he didn't.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to say that now, go ahead.
No, I don't think that at all. I just think that you got to go back to the situation. I mean, the Cave Dogs, they weren't given a super push, as far as I remember. And I think a lot of these power pop bands are a little too sort of period piece, and that won't catch on with the public. I think they're too much, oh, we want to sound like the Animals in 67, and we want to get this one guitar sound. And I've never really tried to do that. I've just tried to write pop songs that sort of are kind of rocking and that are interesting. And I mean, I love all those records and stuff, but I've never tried to kind of be this culty, you know, Mercy Beat kind of band. I think a lot of these bands get caught up in that. You know, they think that, that's their niche they end up in. And I think, I mean, that's something I've never really tried to do. I've tried to be sort of as accessible as possible. You know?
We're talking to Tommy Keane on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. It's 25 minutes after 12. I want to play My Mother Looked Like Marilyn Monroe from the album Songs from the Film. That was your first major league record. And that's also my co-host Rob's favorite Tommy Keane song.
More or less.
What's that song all about, and did your mom really look that hot?
Yeah, she was pretty hot, actually.
What does she do now?
Well, she's no longer with us, actually, but that's neither here nor there. The song is actually about, you know that Hitchcock film Strangers on a Train?
Oh, yeah.
That's the basic sentiment of the song, is that if you met a stranger, you would be able to open up to them a lot easier than someone that you've, say, known for a while. And you'd be able to sort of tell them kind of intimate things about yourself. And that's what that song's about. I mean, My Mother Looked Like Marilyn Monroe, which is sort of a catchy title.
We want to play the song, then we want to talk to you about Lou Reed.
Okay.
But the song's also probably about somebody you met on an airplane or a train.
No, actually someone I met in a bar.
Same thing.
Yeah, same thing.
Hey, this is Tommy Keane's My Mother Looked Like Marilyn Monroe. We'll be right back with Tommy Keane and the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
So far from the ordinary things I once knew. Well, I'll wait for the chance to tell you what is true. I've stood here a long time, everything is clear. And I swear that it's true, yeah, my heart.
My mother looked like Marilyn Monroe from Tommy Keane from the LP Songs from the Film, 1986. We're currently in the middle of a conversation with Tommy Keane. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Tommy Keane tonight played a gig backing up Paul Westerberg in New York City somewhere.
And we'll get to that in a moment. But Tommy?
Yeah?
You did Kill Your Sons, a Velvet Underground song, on your debut, or your Geffen debut, and you also released a live version of it. What is it about Lou Reed or just that song that's so attractive to you?
Well, I'll tell you. When I do cover songs, I try to pick stuff that's sort of removed from the kind of thing that I would write.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just kind of this cool, dirty Lou Reed song.
Because it's pretty dark, and your stuff's usually not that dark.
Yeah, and it just had a really kind of cool feel, and it was... I thought it was him trying to rewrite Sweet Jane, right? And I don't know, I just really liked the song, and some of the other stuff that I've done, for example, I did a Chilton song called Hey Little Child, and I don't think it's a really great song. He's certainly written better songs. I just really liked the beat. It was like Satisfaction or something.
It's a rockin' little number. It's his addition to the pantheon of great rock and roll songs.
Yeah, I mean, and it was just a beat that we used to play it live, so we kind of thought, why don't we just record it? And I would never write a song with a beat like that. So I look for cover songs. I don't look for my favorite songs. I look for songs that would sort of complement the show or would sort of round out a record that would try to make the record more versatile.
Well, you're currently on tour with Paul Westerberg as his lead guitarist. What's that like to go from doing a tour where you're playing all Tommy Keane material with the Tommy Keane and the Tommy Keenettes to going to playing with Paul Westerberg and playing Matt's and Westerberg tunes?
I really like it. It's great to just sort of step back from being the main guy and having to sing every song and have all the attention on you. And it's a lot of fun. I mean, I love playing guitar. I went out with a group called Velvet Crush in 94, 95, and
I saw that show. Yeah,
we played about 90 shows. We toured Europe for a month, and we did two tours in the U.S. We opened for Oasis, and we opened for Jesus and Mary Chain, and they were a lot of fun because they're a real band, and you know, they sort of dress alike, and like they all like the same music, and that was refreshing to get back into a band situation.
Well, what is the deal with Paul Westerberg these days? Tommy, I'm not going to pull any punches here. The Replacements, those guys rock. But after Please to Meet Me and Don't Tell a Soul, I don't think Paul's been able to write a song that's worth diddly squat. Do you disagree with me?
I definitely disagree.
What's with his new material, and how come diehard Replacement fans like myself think it's a little wishy-washy? I mean, Chris Mars, he's still out there rocking.
I guess you haven't heard his last two records.
No, I didn't.
No, you didn't.
That first one he did was great.
The first one did rock. The last two Chris Mars records weren't
any good. That first Chris Mars record make all of Paul Westerberg's new records look stupid.
Really?
No.
I don't know if I'd agree. I mean, it's not the Replacements. I mean, the guy's got to move on, you know? But I think he still writes great songs. I mean, I'll have to admit that, you know, it's hard act to follow Please to Meet Me. I mean, that's such a classic record. But there's our songs on his solo records that I think are fantastic. You know, I think World Class Bad is great. I love Love Untold, the single from the new record. I mean, I think he's trying. It's tough, you know, if you're in one of these groups that were sort of really critically acclaimed and appreciated by a lot, but never kind of broke through. And he's trying to move on, but he's got to do something a little different. I mean, if he just came out with this sort of faux Replacements record, people would still give him a lot of flack. So.
Well, maybe he'll still come of age as a solo artist. I know that one of your records I didn't like as much as the others. That was that Based on Happy Times record.
No.
But your new record comes back without pulling any punches. And what is it that makes a recording artist peak more with certain albums and not with others?
Well, I'll tell you. Because until you sell a 500,000 records, or 1 million, or 10 million, you're always going to be sort of tampering with the formula. Like, well, this didn't work, I should try something else. I mean, it's a natural inclination. I mean, not to just do a completely, 180-degree turn or whatever, but, I mean, based on the Happy Times, I like that album more than Songs from the Film.
I think it was a little more adventurous. And at the time, you know, we put out the two EPs on Dolphin, Places That Are Gone, then we put out Songs from the Film. Songs from the Film, to me, has some great songs, but it's kind of samey sounding. And I think based on Happy Times, sort of took on a few more musical landscapes, and to me it's a more well-rounded record.
And you look pretty suave on the back with the, you know, your top of your head's kind of dark, but
look
your face
haircut.
Face is well lit, you got the sharp hair.
Yeah.
Did the ladies go crazy for you in that period?
Well, I don't know.
Well, do you want to prove me wrong?
Not. It didn't sell.
I'm being honest with you here and telling you what I like and don't like. Do you want to try to prove me wrong? I'll spin any song you want from this based on Happy Times record.
That's Westerberg's favorite record.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Figures.
I remember Our Car Club being really hot.
You remember what?
But Our Car Club is a cover. Let's talk about a Tommy Keane original.
I think,
Hey, Our Car Club, which you recorded on, based on Happy Times, is by Brian Wilson. That's
and
an old...
Mike Love.
Yeah, it's an old Beach Boys song, right?
Right.
What made you want to decide to record that on an album that's otherwise all Tommy Keane originals?
Well, same thing. I mean, I would never write a song like that. But I tell you, I was in a band called The Raz in the late 70s when I was a teenager in D.C., and The Raz were sort of D.C.'s big punk new wave group.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of great originals, but one of the coolest things about this group was they took these really obscure songs, cover songs, and kind of made them their own. And what they did was they took this really kind of lame Beach Boys song and kind of rocked it up. So I used to play that song in that band, and it just seemed appropriate to me to stick it on a record like this on Happy Times.
Well, which song from that album should we play to give the Chris and Rob late night talk show vast listening audience a taste of the Based on Happy Times LP?
Definitely When Our Vows Break.
When Our Vows Break.
Oh, you co-wrote that one with Jules Shear.
He wrote the lyrics.
Now, how did you wind up hooking up with Jules Shear?
Oh, you know, the record company was, you got to have a big hit single, and Jules Shear wrote, you know, that Cyndi Lauper song and the Bangles song, and would you consider writing with him? And I said, yes. I met him, and he was a really cool guy. He was really funny. We got along, and these two songs came out of it. So, I mean, I was willing to give it a go. I also got together with Westerberg during that time to try to write something. And we both just ended up getting drunk. You know, nothing came out of it. But, you know, those are the two people that I agreed to sit down with and try to co-write. You know, and they were, their whole thing was, until you write a major hit single, you're not going to get into the studio. And that's where they were coming from in those days.
Do you think, do most people appreciate how much pressure there is to have a hit single because, you know, you get on the major labels, and if they get their promotion and marketing machine behind you, it can be extremely effective, but at the same time, it costs them a lot of money, and they want to make sure they get their return on it. So they really put a lot of pressure on you guys to have the million seller.
Yeah, but putting the pressure on is one thing, but putting the money behind it's another. You know, it's like put your money where your mouth is. I mean, they can talk the talk all day long, but until they... you know, get out their pocketbooks and just go for it. They're always going to end up blaming the artist. It's always like, oh, well, blah, 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 you know. But in the reality, it was their fault. I mean, why would they sign you and spend all that money in the first place if they didn't believe in you at one point?
Right. Why would they sign you to the contract if they weren't going to then spend the extra money to actually promote the record so they can make their money back?
Right. I mean, how many times have you heard, it was a great record, but they didn't promote it?
Too often.
Exactly.
All right. We're going to listen to a track from Tommy Keane album. Which one are we going to hear?
When Our Vows Break.
When Our Vows Break on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
This is When Our Vows Break, Tommy Keane.
Now shattered it,
when it's over,
it's so many pieces.
break. Tommy Keane with a little help from Jules Shear on the lyrical content there. This is Chris and Rob, late night talk show. I'm Chris and he's Rob.
And we're talking to none other than Tommy Keane, who is relaxing in his plushest New York City suite where he's on the road playing guitar for Paul Westerberg. Do you guys have a name, or are you just the Paul Westerberg Band, or are you like, you know, the Evil Gamblers or something?
Well, at one point it was called the Paid Companions, but I think he kind of dropped that.
Like he had to pay to have friends?
How much is he paying you guys anyway?
Pardon?
How much is he paying you guys?
Oh, not too bad.
Well, who else is in the band? Because it's a star-studded cast. You got Paul Westerberg on rhythm guitar, Tommy Keane on lead guitar. Who else is in there?
There's a guy named Ken Chastain playing bass from Minneapolis. And Michael Bland, formerly of the New Power Generation Prince's group on drums.
So he's probably laying down a pretty heavy beat, eh?
Yeah, he's pretty amazing.
Now, does Prince ever come and sit in with you guys?
No.
Have you ever met Prince?
No, I haven't.
What about Paul? Does Paul Westerberg know Prince because from their old heady Minneapolis days?
I think Paul's met him. I don't know how much he's really sort of hung out with him.
I'd like to know if Prince really digs the Replacements and Husker Du or not.
I think he does. I think he digs the Replacements. You know, I don't know how much. But
what about Husker? You would think that Prince would probably just love Husker.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, we know who some of the old faves of yours are, but who do you like now? Who that's big on the radio or not big on the radio? Who's making records in 1996 that you enjoy listening to?
Let's see.
That many people, huh?
No, hold on. I like the New Posies record.
Yeah, that's good.
I know they have a new record coming out, but I really love that Wilco record.
Yeah, I really like that one.
The guy who plays guitar with me, Jay Bennett, is in Wilco. Let's see.
Well, what do you think about all that kind of country twang, Wilco, Sunvolt, Bottle Rockets, Jayhawks, Blue Mountain, Jolene kind of thing?
The more they try to make it authentic country, I don't really dig it. If it's sort of bastardized country, like the Rolling Stones would do a kind of a country song, I like that. You know, I mean, I don't like country music per se as an idiom, but I like certain things about it. So if someone comes along and they're kind of distinctive sounding and they sound kind of country-ish, that's cool, you know, for me.
What about Dwight Yoakam? That guy's got more rock and roll in him than Chuck Berry.
Yeah, he's okay. I saw him, back in L.A. and before I lived there in '85, he was putting the punk rock club downtown called Al's Bar. And way before, you know, he put out those records that sold millions or whatever, and he was sort of he was in L.A. trying to do this punk rock country thing. It's pretty interesting. And he had that guitar player, the guy who produces his records, Pete Anderson.
Yeah, Pete Anderson, he's great.
Yeah, and it was a sort of best-kept secret at the time. And then a year later, he was a big deal. So, kind of those, I saw it when.
Well, Tommy, you got this new record out 10 years after. What's 11 years after going to sound like?
Jeez.
Are you working on any new songs on the road or putting together any new bands or anything?
Well, you know, actually, before I made this record, I wrote a big pile of songs, and I was trying to stay ahead of myself. So in case that a year later, being right now, I have enough songs, but then I kind of got sidetracked and then I started playing with Paul and stuff. And I don't know. I think I'll do another record, probably for Matador. Don't know when it's going to come out. Probably in about a year. But I think the thing about 10 years after is that a lot of these songs, well, not a lot, but I'd say four or five of them are pretty somewhat old. I mean, say from 91 to 94, that was kind of saving for this record.
Well, when did your last Geffen album come out?
Last Geffen album came out in 89, and then 92 I had an EP on Matador.
Okay, I got that. It had seven songs on it?
Five.
Oh, okay. I got something. I don't know. It's like got a gray and white cover.
Yeah, Sleeping on a Roller Coaster.
Okay, yeah, I got that one.
Then 93, the Alias compilation came out, and then 96, 10 years after. So there was, you know, basically there were 7 years between full-length albums. So I had these songs sort of saved for this record.
This isn't going to be like when Steve Miller went to make a record and he had 120 songs and he pared it down to the best 12 and then the first single off the album was still Abracadabra.
Wow.
Remember that? What a train wreck that was.
So I think the next record will be more sort of, you know, brand new and spontaneous.
And then are going to do a Tommy Keane tour, full-fledged, you for 90 minutes. You could get Paul Westerberg to play guitar for you, and, you know, you could get Grant Hart to play drums for you.
And get the Muscle Shoals horns, too. Maybe Tower of Power if they're not available.
There you go.
You'll end the tour about $100,000 in debt.
Ooh, well, hopefully not.
Well, how's things working out with the indie label? Because you went for about 4 or 5 years there on that big, gigantic, monolithic Geffen record company.
Yeah.
Now you're working for Alias and Matador.
Uh-huh. You know, it's not that different, I have to say.
And is the money different?
The money's different, but the whole sort of we're the label, you're the artist, it's still the same. You know, everyone sort of complains and drops the ball.
Well, I mean, because, you know, with certain elements of the musical society,
uh-huh.
they seem to think that the only way to have indie any credibility is to have indie cred.
Well, and, lots of that.
And you have to be on Matador to be cool, or you have to be on Alias to be cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if, once you jump from Bar None to Atlantic, you've sold out and everything's changed. But in reality, you got to be on your toes with these indie guys just as much as you got to be on your toes with the big guys, and you got to hope you can get one that backs you just like you need a major label to back you.
Right, right.
Because,
yeah.
you know...
I think, you know, that indie jumping to major thing, I mean, that was the case, say, when I went from Dawson to Geffen, but I don't think that's the case now. I mean, nowadays, a band gets signed to, you know, whatever, and a month later, they're like they're the biggest thing going. You know, I think that indie label, the indie labels are great, but I think that whole credibility thing is, oh, you have to come out on indie, is totally out the window now. Because what's selling is this same genre of music, you know, this alternative music. So it's almost, the sooner you get it out there, the sooner they can sort of throw it out on the radio, the better it is for everybody.
And you gotta go with somebody who's going to put your music out where the people can hear it. Someone, you know, there's nothing worse than going to a town and playing it, and then going to the record store across the street and not finding your disc in there.
Right, and unfortunately that happens a lot on indie labels.
Well, we sure appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Tommy.
Okay, cool.
And good luck on the rest of the tour with Paul, and we hope you come back and do some of your own stuff soon.
Thanks a lot. Yeah,
we're playing On the Runway next. Is there anything you want our listeners to know about On the Runway? Is this song about an airplane hijacking or something?
No. actually, On the Runway is just sort of looking ahead and hoping new things and good things happen.
All right, well, we hope the same for you.
Okay.
All right, so Tommy Keane on the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
Yeah.